Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 51, making the case for a new technology. Here we go. Co-hosting with me again is Simone Bennett. How you doing, Simone?
Well, thank you.
Hey, thanks again for coming back on the show to co-host with me and also coming up with a really good title. I think that that's something that we all deal with of, you know, I want to change what we're doing a little bit, but there might be a few steps to do that. So my goal here is that we can just conversationally discuss what we might need to do to change a technology within our organization. So joining us is Michael, also known as Mick Huxley. How you doing, Mick?
I'm pretty good, Rick. Yourself?
Hey, thanks for coming back on the show. Everybody should, of course, have listened to every single episode and know you very well from your previous introduction. But for those who might be new, can you give us a quick bio, quick introduction of yourself, Mick?
Yeah, certainly. So I suppose, as you said, I'm Mick Huxley. I've been playing the IT game now for around about 10 years, and I work for an organization in Australia that's rolling out the what's known as the National Broadband Network, which is a government initiative to roll fiber optic cables out to every house in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I work within our data center team. So my title is the Microsoft Architect, and I have overall governance responsibility and I suppose architectural say over all of the Microsoft solutions that get deployed within our environment.
Outstanding. Is the big project still going on as you guys had planned, or any big changes since we last had talked?
Yeah, no, look, it's still going really well. It's been a very busy short period of time for us. We only set up our second data center, I think, by about the end of May. Mm-hmm. And we really are still on a very, very steep curve in terms of the organization being basically a government startup. But now look, we're on track. There's a 3-month rollout, a 3-year rollout plan actually getting released this month, which will be fantastic as well. And, there's still quite a bit of buzz. It's still a fairly newsworthy item here in Australia, and there's a lot of politics around it. But at the end of the day, it's a great project. It's a great place to work, and it's starting to make a difference, which is good.
Sure. So, our topic really is introducing change to an organization, technically. And I think, Mick, Simone, you as a, you know, especially with your project management experience, can appreciate the whole stick to the plan approach of everything we do, really, everything from technologies we use and how we do our job. But, you know, every now and then, you might be doing something, using a tool, doing your task, and you know, do you ever think that, wow, I really wish we were doing it with a different technology, not necessarily a replacement product, or even it could even be a whole new category of a product. Have any of you gone through the steps or the process to introduce something to your organization that wasn't going on before, or maybe a replacement of an existing product? Anybody gone through it?
Yeah, I've been through it a number of times in a number of different roles. Yeah, and it can be something that's as simple as, you know, we need a new solution that allows us to manage our data center better, or enables us to manage our desktop and laptop fleet better, or enables us to report more centrally on some of the stuff we're doing, and that's one, I suppose, one example of technology that, you know, often tries to get implemented, particularly in that bottom up from the IT pros, the IT admins through, and up into the levels of management and implemented. But that's probably at times the harder one to get the case over the line for. I think oftentimes the ones that are easy is where you can obviously demonstrate financial gain for the organization, be it, you know, lower TCO, better ROI, improved collaboration, you know, improve the cost effectiveness of the organization doing what they do. And that's where you really get the customer focused style apps or the applications that you bring in that, you know, affect the people that are at the coalface actually working on their PCs, as opposed to the guys in the background just managing the data center.
Well, you said it right, Mick. You're condensing our podcast to 1 minute because you talked about everything. You said this is what needs to get done. Then you talked about the financial impact, and then you also addressed the stakeholders, so the end users or the customers, if you will. I think that's a great way to put it. I don't really think there's a I mean, that's very comprehensive, and I think that's really what has to happen each time. The flip side of that, though, is we might be dealing with technologies that are top-down, right? You mentioned bottom-up, but top-down happens a lot also, where higher levels of management, you know, make a decision that this is what we're going to do. These are the tools that we have in place for these requirements to address our stakeholders. How about dethroning that type of direction? Anyone have any specific comments of kind of working against the top-down approach? I have one. If you guys don't,
why would you work against the top-down approach?
Because the top may not be using these tools, right? They might make a decision that this is what we're going to do, and it comes down. But if it's not doing the job, or if you're missing out on your stakeholders, that might be a good reason to, you know, request a change, I guess is where I'm going.
Well, I would ask them more, instead of fighting against it, understand what they're trying to achieve, and if you have a better option, present that better option. But otherwise, your job as an IT person in business is to provide the business with the tools that they want to use, not to decree what the business should be doing.
Fair point. That's true, because really, if it's a top-down thing, and if everybody starts, you know, bringing up their own idea, that becomes a management nightmare of, you know, just listening to people try to advocate for this or that. So, I appreciate that. So,
yeah, look, I think it really works this way. When and I see this a little bit in different orgs, and I have this conversation with some friends every now and again. And one of my I suppose famous lines in the workplace is, "Don't give me a solution, give me a requirement."
Ooh,
and
yeah, I like that.
That's as honest and as forthright as you can be when something comes down from the top. It's like, you can come to me and say, I want an iPad. Okay, mm-hmm. You don't. You want a piece of executive, you know, bling to flash around, and you don't want to go and pay for it yourself. That's not necessarily the best example of it, but if you can give me the requirements, I can build use cases. I can work with my BAs to translate that into, from business requirements to technical requirements. We can go and we can run some proof of concepts, and that's really where you're going to get the best answer. It's the real life trying things out. And sometimes the stuff that comes from top down, you look at it and you go, okay, give me the requirements, but you know that at the end of the day, you're going to end up following the company line on it, because it is a good idea. Other times it's not too bad, and you can get away with pushing back, but pushing back with a process and with a reason, rather than just saying no.
Yeah.
Which is the important thing.
I think that is definitely the most important first step, is identify the requirements. Whenever you're introducing a new technology, and whether or not it would be replacing something else, especially if there's a situation where something else is not meeting those requirements. Especially, you know, because the business, you know, everyone's stakeholders, right? Those needs are totally subject to change over time. So to say that this requirement isn't being met may be a reflection of, you know, the needs of the stakeholders or the requirements of the stakeholders. So that's a good way of looking at it, Mick.
Yeah, I think it's really the only way that you can look at it. That way it doesn't really matter whether it comes in. I mean, we're speaking about, you know, top down, bottom up, but even sideways in, you know, from other areas of the business, it really is, enables you to get down to the core of the problem. And that's really what we should be looking at. It's not, we don't implement technology for the sake of implementing technology. Certainly I don't in my workplace. I've got better things to do than add more, you know, complexity to the stack. And if you can get down to the requirements factor, it becomes a non-negotiable component then. When you really break it down to those individual needs, it's the same as the scoping document, which is obviously something that comes out of it. Get it documented, get it agreed upon, and then you can actually make informed decisions. And you're all working as the one team at that point as well. It removes that muddiness or murkiness from the waters.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that as IT, more and more, if you aren't servicing the business, they'll find a way around you. They'll go to the cloud, they'll outsource it, they'll install it themselves internally. So instead of saying no instantly to everything because you don't want to deal with it or you don't want to figure out how to implement it quickly, you should just be finding out, well, what are you trying to achieve? And can I be involved in the process of planning this instead of you telling me what you think is the right solution? But if you start to work that way, you probably find you won't get so much top down because people will realize they can come to you and get help instead of having to skulk up to you and just say, oh, can we please have this?
Well, those are all outstanding points. And the one thing that caught my ear the most was sideways. You mentioned that sideways phenomena, Mick. That's definitely a frequent occurrence in the larger orgs, right? So when you have groups that may have similar functions but different stakeholders may or may not be using the same infrastructure or software tools to do that. So I'll give you an example. I used to work in an organization that had many, many different infrastructure teams that provided infrastructure for internal end users. But they were totally different end users by organizational arrangement, different location, had slightly different requirements. But what the infrastructure team did was materially different from each of those, meaning what tools they used. There were some definite, you know, common factor products like Active Directory, right? We all used Active Directory. But in that particular example, there was a collaboration tool. And this was kind of before the dawn of SharePoint. And we had this saying that said, well, I'm not going to blow the company name, but the saying was, if the company only knew what the company knew, simply put, I don't know what, you know, my peer on the other side of the organization is doing for this requirement. And he might or she might have selected a set of products and a set of solutions, and maybe they might have different requirements, but they were able to really deliver it without, you know, they came to that conclusion on their own, yet they're in the same organization. So that sideways aspect is definitely something that if you're in a larger organization, explore that, right? And so if the company only knew what the company knew, that was real for me in my experience.
Yeah, look, and that's certainly fair. And I think that one of the largest challenges that are facing a lot of organizations at the moment, particularly large ones, is the amount of unstructured data and disparate systems that they potentially have right across the, you know, the globe,
yeah.
As opposed to just the, you know, even just a country or just a state. And that's why roles such as, I suppose, knowledge management and, you know, document keeping, record keeping, discovery, enterprise architecture are all such big roles at the moment, and it's really because people, you know, organizations don't know what they know.
Yeah, it's a recurring phenomena. It's real. And, my stomach hurts. You just said unstructured data. Ugh. Sorry, I hate it. That has always been one of my most. It's the hardest thing to address. I don't know. That's just the best way to put it. Other than some three-letter acronym enterprise management systems that you might be dealing with, Simone. But that's okay.
Oh, I hate them so bad.
Oh, the passion is real. I love it. I love it.
So awesome. Bad. You don't even know the hate I have right now.
Well, you're in an awfully good mood for as upset as you were at the start of the podcast, so that's all right. So when it comes to, you know, the requirements, right? And I think, Mick, your advice of starting on the requirements, that's the gold right there. Has anyone ever, you know, made requirements or had to prioritize requirements, right? I mean, or cut a requirement out or, I don't know, kind of like weight them a different way? Have you ever had to do that when you go looking at different things? Because, you know, the way I look at it, is there some things that you absolutely need? And then I guess the phrase that we use in the States is there's some, well, I could live without this, right? You know, life would go on without this, but have you ever had to convince, you know, prioritizing of requirements? Anybody ever gone through anything of that nature?
Sorry, I thought you saw my chat window.
No.
I read a great article the other day in Forbes magazine about a company that implemented SAP early and under budget, and the head of IT there was sharing how he managed to do that. And I thought the best thing I took from the article was that there are things that you have to do to make a project work, and then there's Apple polishing. So I think when you're prioritizing requirements, you can say, what can I put in place right now so that this is functional? And then what can I go back on and work on bit by bit to make it fantastic?
Apple polishing. The real question is it food grade wax? No. No, that's funny. Apple polishing. That's a good way of putting it. Wow. Mick, did you have something to say?
Yeah, no, I went through this very process, actually looking at a SharePoint upgrade some time ago. And the way that we basically broke it down was we looked at the amount of hours or the amount of working days in the year based on, and then broke that down by developers and BAs and project managers and gave it just a cost factor. I suppose very, very similar to like a chargeback or a showback mm-hmm. sort of model that you'd see with a private cloud infrastructure. And what we then did was, okay, we scoped out a number of the components, number of the requirements, and went, right, this will cost you 10 points, this will cost you 20 points, this will cost you 5 points, this will cost you 10 points, but if you do this with it, then, you know, it'll reduce to 5, but you need to buy this other 22. And we gave people a quota of what they're actually able to achieve in the timeframes and within the budgets that were actually set. And then we allowed the stakeholders to sit there and go, okay, that's really important to us. That's a mandatory. That's not something that we can live without, but it takes up 50% of our time and resource budget for the next 3, 6, 12 months. We can live with that. We understand where you're coming from. And so I suppose it's very similar to what Simone was saying about polishing the apple. It was really here's our priorities. Let's get these things in. These are the mandatory requirements. These are the must-haves. Then we sort of filled out the rest with the time allocations that we had left, and that got us through a 12-month period. At that point, we were able to sit down and review, renew, recost, and keep going. It was amazing, you know, 12 months later, actually having a look at how the priorities had changed in that time, how the requirements had changed in that time as the organization grew, the application scope changed, the application lifecycle changed, and, you know, it didn't quite run, I suppose, waterfall, you know, if we'd set it all up from the start. It was very, I suppose, agile-esque in a way because we had breakpoints, stop reviewed.
Sure.
Where's our direction?
Well, once you've come to that, you know, that pinnacle of your journey, the next step is to change it, right? So you've gathered all your information, understood why a solution is used, identified requirements, and maybe you have an idea. And the bad part, right, is, Mick, that we all have different experience with different products and solutions and ways of doing things. So sometimes we come in guns blazing with, let's do it this way, but let's assume we've all done our homework and identified the stakeholders' requirements and all that other good stuff. How do we move it upward, right? How do we make that business case, advocate? How do we then go about those next steps? Well, I don't know. I've never been successful in it. Anybody?
Well, I would. I've always planned it out, costed it up, found a few great reasons why it would be better than what we have. What benefits would it have? How does it align with what the business is trying to do? And then start with my manager, convince them to book a meeting with their manager and so forth till we get to where we need to go.
Well, that's a very important point. Don't, like, overstep your manager and go right to the CIO. Yes, that's career-saving advice. Yes, very good one.
But you need them to support you, and you need them to agree that you can spend your time on that. So,
yeah, true. That's true. So I think a business case doesn't need to be super fancy. It can be a catchy title. Hey, are we interested in cutting our operational expenses for this in half? Or hey, or licensing expenses. Or hey, do we want to take our turnaround time for this business process to be cut in half? Or you name it, right? Little catch points like that might be all it takes to kind of get that meeting made, and then communicate the situation, the problem, the alternative. Yeah, that's a good way of looking.
Or find a problem that's occurring every day. So for example, where I work, we put a business case to virtualize all our sites, 28 sites, and it was quite a pricey project to get approved.
Yeah.
But I had a good opening because we were constantly having really remote sites with server failures, and it would take upwards of a week or more to get a replacement piece of hardware or even just a tech out there to fix the server. So we had a plant offline for that time, and they were banding around the thought of sending out a spare server to every site or all these other types of things, developing really expensive support contracts. When you see an opportunity like that and you have a better solution, that's your perfect chance to do up your solution and say, hey, this is a better solution to the things we're thinking of. It's new. It might cost a little bit more, but I've thought about it. Here's my initial design. This is what I'd need to get it off the ground. Mm-hmm. I have the skills or I don't have the skills, but I know I can use this third party or these people in the business and so forth. So you don't just need to create a big meeting, but find a problem, create a solution, and sell it to the people that are closest to you because they understand the technology. So if you can get them on your side, they'll help you sell it to people who aren't technical in the business.
I think the takeaway also is that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we have the skill, we don't have the skill, whatever. But we also need to accommodate for who has the time, who doesn't have the time, right? Chances are we don't work in infrastructure teams with scores and scores of available people. So we have to take that into consideration that if we're going to do something differently, will it have an impact on the labor requirement? Is it going to take more time? Is it going to take a learning curve for people? So it needs to be accounted for. Not to say that it's impossible, but okay, it's going to free up infrastructure time for this so that they can learn this new skill. So always keep that in mind. That's a harder thing because in a way, I guess the best example I have in my head is when we decided that this virtualization thing was a good idea, right? We were all maybe doing it a little bit underground in our labs and stuff like that, development stuff on our laptop or maybe on an old server. And then we very quickly got it pretty clear that we can save a lot of capital costs and, have our deployment time or even more, whatever. So think about some of the things we might have done, especially on the bottom-up direction, and see that you can have a benefit. And we have to monetize it, and it has to make sense to the business.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should cover, instead of just how do you resist a top-down new technology, how do you really... Like, I'm sure Hux has experience as well. How do you create a compelling business case? How do you go, I go get quotes, I figure out if I need a consultant, how much is that going to cost, what's the software cost, and then what's, for the virtualization product, how much did it cost to have a plant down for 1 hour? Things like that. So yeah, I don't know if Hux has any what's some real ways to write a business case?
So what you're really talking about there is total cost of ownership, return on investment, and also the opportunity cost of doing or not doing something based on the current implementation. So
yeah,
if it costs,
business,
the business
understands.
So I mean, the notes that I had left over from last night when I was actually doing some prep work for a change was...
Wow, more prep work than me. I appreciate it.
That's all right. I think I spent 20 minutes doing it while I had a glass of wine.
Well, cheers.
So it was that. So it was, opportunity cost and also RCO, ROI, TCO. But really, when you start talking up the chain, senior management particularly are interested in three things. When will it be done? Who's accountable for it? And how much is it going to cost or save?
And what do I get? Why would I bother?
Yeah. So,
if
but
you
that's
say,
cost.
Oh, it's easy to manage. Don't care. I pay you to manage it.
Nice.
This is where it comes back to cost. Everything comes back to a dollar.
Yeah, but if it's, my boss says to me, I already pay you to be here, so I don't care if you're here. I pay you to be here. But if I said it costs you $50,000 for that plant to be offline for 2 hours, he cares about that.
Yeah.
And he might already pay you to be there, but whilst you're there doing the same mundane repeated task time and time again, you're not developing solutions that enable, you're not developing solutions that help prevent that plant being down. So you're not actually enabling business or preventing lost capital, preventing lost cash flow. You're just doing a repeatable task, and that's
good in theory. But when I had to argue those exact points with the senior executives, the fact of the matter is that that's not a tangible cost to them.
Operational cost.
Whereas not killing cows for a whole day is a tangible cost.
Okay, the operational part of that is a tough thing to sell. I mean, I, and honestly, I work in a company that tries to sell stuff, and I still don't even really know a good way to quantify OPEX savings. That's a whole nother topic on its own.
Yeah, your boss would probably appreciate that because he knows what he wants you to be doing and what he doesn't. You don't have time to get it done, but the executives who approve the costing probably don't.
That's where you need to extrapolate. Well, so it's not just your time, it's someone else's time, and someone else's time, and someone else's time by an hour a day, by a four head count, by a charge rate of X, is X amount per year, this will cost blah per year, off you go.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you do to create a business case.
I think also you need a compelling overall goal, right? To Simone's point, keep this facility online, right? I don't want to say a mission statement, but you know, a guiding theme, you know, kind of like in the executive summary, the overall goal of this solution would be to increase the uptime of a critical infrastructure or facility. I think that,
well, it's to solve a problem, like,
They've dealt with it. This assumption is, you know, we've had an issue with uptime, or maybe we haven't. Maybe it's simply a costing issue. Our goal is to reduce this acquisition and operational cost of X, Y, and Z. I like your idea that the executive will say, well, I'll just pay you to manage it. That was probably told to you, or at least you learned that the hard way. You probably didn't make that one up.
They were the exact words. Like, nice. I pay you to be here. Nice. I don't care what your time's spent on. You're here, so that's your... But it'll save me time. I don't care.
Harsh.
I'll hire a junior to do the mundane stuff and you can do the other stuff because that will be $50,000 a year and you want $4 million. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I can't really argue with that. So you need a more compelling argument than it's just going to save me time because really you're just one of a million people in the business if you have a big company.
Yeah. No, look, I think as we said, really for me it boils down to a couple of fairly simple things. Fulfilling requirements, whether they be yours, whether they be sideways or upper or lower parts of the business. That's kind of what we're there to do. Mm-hmm. Two, when you are trying to push for things, I think as we touched on there, it's you need to demonstrate what it, you know, put it into management terms. What does it mean? If it means, you know, increasing business uptime, reducing, you know, lost revenue due to downtime, you know, maybe reducing injuries in the workplace, you know, it could be something, you know, sure, as significant as that. It could be more of a marketing and public perception thing, or it could really be quite a tangible either operational or capital expenditure saving as a result. And as soon as you can work out what the key is, and really break apart technology and break apart all everything else, if you can really work out what that one key differentiator is with this technology, and it won't be, oh, it does better replication, or, you know, it does something like that. It'll be, it enables the business to do blah, or it saves the business doing blah. And once you can demonstrate that, it should be easy.
Yeah, I agree. I think no matter where the requests come from, whether it's top down, bottom up, your workmates, or just an idea you've seen in your industry, you need to solve a problem. So whether someone's saying to me, I want an iPad, or someone's saying to me, this site's offline all the time, there's a problem behind every request. Find out what the problem is. Present a solution. If you have a technology that you want to implement, you need to find a problem that's going to solve in your business to provide a compelling business case. And if you can find a problem, for example, that a site's offline or that an executive can't work remotely easily, then you can find a solution to that problem and you can present your technology as an option. But you need to be prepared that everyone you work with isn't stupid and they might have their own ideas. So you need to have a compelling argument and you need to understand your proposal, how you'll implement it, how much it will cost, and be able to answer their questions. And, I mean, a good thing to learn is to just be open to their suggestions as well, because maybe your idea isn't the best in the end.
Wow. You guys prepared. You got all this good information. I'm such a bad host. You guys are making me look bad.
I wasn't prepared.
Well, you guys are doing great. Hey,
I was doing SAP.
We're going to wrap it up here. Hey, Mick, thank you so much for being back on the show.
Yeah, no worries, Rick. Good to be back.
Outstanding. And Simone, thank you again for co-hosting.
Thank you for having me.
And Mick, you are on Twitter at the Huxman, and I'm going to put a link to that in the podcast notes. Simone, you're on Twitter at Kittensticks, and I'll have one there for you as well. Mick, your blog, MickHuxley.com, you can find him there. And other than that, thanks for being on the show.
No worries. Thanks, Rick.